Broadcasting live. Good afternoon, Blockhead Nation, and thank you for stopping by once again. You are listening to your favorite Blockhead, the only podcast in the podcasting world that can somehow incorporate the Peanuts comic strip 1 minute and then be talking about MMA and Warriors Inside the Octagon the next. I am your host. My name is Brian Little. Thank you so much for coming by this afternoon or this evening or tomorrow morning, whatever time you're going to tune into the show. I appreciate you coming by, Blockhead Nation. Just a quick reminder, if you want to be on the call, there will be an open Zoom link for episode 200 on July 30th and July 31st. If you want to be on that Zoom call, you need to direct message me, and I will get you set up so that you can be part of the big day for episode 200. Getting that out of the way. Also, just a quick recap, there have been a lot of you that have reached out with your opinions about a few things I said about skateboarding in the Olympics, and I'd like to address it now, just very briefly. I really appreciate the fact that so many of you are in complete and utter agreement with your favorite Blockhead. I'm so thrilled that you can listen to the voice of reason and the voice of enlightenment, that there is no contrast, there is no difference of opinion coming from any angle that is coming towards this show. I'm thankful that you can see that there are going to be some problematic issues that'll come up down the road with skateboarding in the Olympics. So thank you for seeing it my way. I really do appreciate that, listeners. Now, looking at what I want to discuss today, the Schultz Museum. If you are interested in getting other info, and maybe more accurate, it's guaranteed more accurate info about Charles Schultz's life, I guarantee you there's a place you can go. It's schultzmuseum.org. Okay, you won't find that in the blog today. Always go to yourfavoriteblockhead.com/blog to be able to get more info and more insight, more links that are going on for this particular episode. But schultzmuseum.org, that one has a lot of info that is very helpful to listeners of this show. If you want to know more about Charles Schultz, including a timeline, if you want to get more detail about his life, you can find out about everything from when he first started drawing comic strips, how Snoopy was not actually originated from one of his dogs named Snooky. He actually got it from his dog Spike, and there was an actual Spike in the comic series. So it's a lot of info, but if you didn't know, Charles Schultz happened to be, he actually happened to be in the Army. He was drafted in 1942. Now, up until that time, he was just coming out of high school. He was getting interested in comic strips, and he mentioned that there are really, when he was growing up, during the Depression era, there were really only three forms of entertainment. You had the Saturday afternoon movie house, whatever features are being shown. You had the evening radio programs, and you had the comic strips. That's about all you had to work with. So on this show, we talk about the comic strip. We talk about Charles Schultz and the Peanuts. This is very much a radio program, but it's a one-man, independent, lone wolf type of program on this thing called a podcast, giving the common man a chance to be his own radio star, really. But and when you look back through the timeline, when he ended up going into the war, again, being part of the Greatest Generation, it's just a thrill to see Schultz's accolades as he went into the war. But he has this quote on here that is really profound. He said, "The Army taught me all I needed to know about loneliness." Now, him being isolated in the midst of all these other soldiers, I mean, you no longer are independent. You no longer stand in any way. You are no longer from a different origin. You know, you've probably heard that before. If you watch movies like Jarhead, you are not this color or this color. You are now green. You know, you are light green or dark green, meaning the Marine mentality. I mean, you can decipher that for yourself. They mentioned things like on the movie Stripes. I don't care what color you are, how smart you are, how dumb you are. All of you are going to learn how to eat, sleep, walk, talk, shoot like a United States soldier. They're going to program you into what they need you to be, which is, and to accomplish the mission. Now, I can speak to that myself being a Navy veteran. And I don't talk too much about my time in the military on here, but I think I'm going to go ahead and do it now. There are some things I've never disclosed to this group, and I'm going to do it in this episode. Now, I won't go into detail about it, but for Charles Schulz's sake, this is a man who served, who was drafted, and saw Hitler's final solution up close, or at least was about 50 yards away from him when he first showed up. Again, the timeline is very descriptive of Charles Schulz's endeavors when he was in the Army. But believe it or not, there's another celebrity that I can identify with a little bit more, or just as much as I do with Charles Schulz. And don't let this rattle your cage too much. It's Bill Cosby. No, I'm not talking about the Cosby who's been convicted, the one who's being let on a probation pretty soon, the one that we used to think of as Mr. Huxtable. I'm not talking about him. Bill Cosby, before all this stuff came to fruition, did a whole lot of stand-up comedy. He had one back in the 80s called Bill Cosby Himself. He had one that was called 49 when he turned 49 years old. He also did one that dealt with his geometry teacher named Benjamin Sapolsky. Okay, this is talking about the stand-up routines by this man. Again, before all of it, came, before what's done in the dark came to the light. But Bill Cosby was a Navy sailor. He ended up going in after he dropped out of high school and decided that he needed something better than what he was being provided. He didn't want to work on the shipping docks anymore. So he enlisted in the Navy. Well, when he got in, he found out quickly that there is no individualism in it. And somewhere in there, he just realized that I wanted to get out and I wanted to go to back to, I wanted to go to college. Well, the same thing happened with me being in for 4 years. I realized that it's kind of like in the movie The Shawshank Redemption. Sometimes their wings are just too bright. So I decided to do my 4 years. I got out, got my post-9/11 GI Bill, and I have not looked back ever since. But I'm very thrilled that I got a chance to be stationed in San Diego. I'm thrilled with the friendships I've made with so many, including one that's in the YFB network, Mr. Ryba Dan USA, Mr. Daniel Hurd, served on my ship, and also he can attest to a lot of this too. If you go onto a ship, you have times where you are supposed to be, where you are assigned as what's called an FSA, a food service attendant. I guarantee you it's still there. It might be called something different. I really doubt it. However, if you are an FSA, that is a miserable existence. But it's for a 30-day period where you work in the galley. You work with the kitchen, the mess decks. You could be washing pots and pans. You could be doing the dishes. You could be working in the chief's mess, working in the wardroom with all of the officers. You could be working the mess decks. So all of these considered, nobody enjoys being an FSA. If they get assigned to be one, it's like, let me just survive these 30 days. Then they go back to their division. Not the cooks. Not those who are culinary specialists. For 4 years on my ship, probably more like 3 years and so many months, I was a culinary specialist on my ship. By the time that I went to the military, I did not have an active position. I just went into whatever position opened up come boot camp, I'd go ahead and take the job. And I had five positions that were offered to me. Culinary specialist, storekeeper, engineman, machinist mate, hospital corpsman. I knew I didn't want to go into any type of corpsman work. At least I didn't think I did. Didn't want to work on the hull of the engine. Didn't understand what storekeeper was. I think it might have been one of those. I didn't realize it was just maintaining supplies on a ship. Either way, it's in the supply department. And ended up choosing culinary specialist. Not realizing what I was getting myself into. I enjoyed San Diego. I enjoyed my ship, the USS Pearl Harbor. I believe in what it stands for. I hated my existence for 3+ years on that ship because I was stuck in a dead-end job. We worked sometimes easily 20 to 21 hours a day. I one time talked to my dad over the phone about that, and he asked me, is that legal? It doesn't matter in the military because there's this thing called contract law. You sign the contract, you are military property. It doesn't matter. And why did they do that? Well, because we only had so many people manning our positions. They really couldn't rotate out who we had. But at the same time, we had a dictator type of a senior chief who was a bully who enjoyed making our lives miserable. In my case, I found out quick that I was the least skilled amongst everybody. I was the weakest link, often, and I absolutely hated my existence on that ship. These FSAs would leave and go back to their division, and I would envy them. because I couldn't get away from the mistreatment. All of these people above me that were E6, E7, and E8, I will fast forward through all that and spare you all of the extra sob story. That's not what this is meant to be. I'm personalizing things for you because Charles Schulz went through the greatest generation being drafted. No telling what he had to face. This profound statement about he learned everything he needed to know about loneliness. I learned that I was never meant to be this authoritative. I'm too much of a lone wolf. I'm too much of an independent thinker. Now, is that different when it comes to middle school? Yeah, of course. I've got a very tough audience, and it's called being a storyteller. You want to keep somebody's attention? You tell a story, and you tell it well. History allows me to do that. This podcast allows me to do that. But in Bill Cosby's case, he talked about the same thing. When he got out, he went to Temple University, and he was actually doing well in all of his courses. And it was so funny. There's a part where he says a guy came up to him and said, "You're on the dean's list." He said, "Oh, God, what have I done now?" The guy's like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "I don't want to go back to the Navy. I don't want to go stand watches and post again." I didn't. He's like, "No, being on the dean's list means you have a 3.0 average, grade point average and above." Well, it's like, "All right, then." He squared his shoulders. "Well, then have the dean call me." I felt the same way when I was in college. Because when I made the profound decision in the midst of everybody telling me, "Oh, the economy's not good. You might want to hang on to a job you've got." And I decided I don't need the military. I'm glad that I served my country. I'm getting out with a honorable discharge. No, that's what you want, an honorable discharge. I got out with an honorable discharge. I had a chance to go back to school and take it seriously the second time around. And I'm walking towards my ship. It's about 3 months left in my time serving in the military. And this same senior chief who had now been promoted to what's called warrant officer. This is a part where you no longer call him senior chief. You call him sir. I salute the guy. And he says, "You're still on the ship?" I said, "Oh yeah, 3 months left. I'm going home." And this look came over his face. And he went, "You're getting out?" And I turned to him and I said, "You bet I am, sir." It felt so liberating and so good to give this bully the middle finger by saying, "I don't need you anymore. You need the military and I don't. I'm going back to college and I'm going to take it seriously this time." I just told him I'm going back to college and I'm going to take it seriously. And he had no answer except for, "Well, good luck to you." It was that moment that I felt the most powerful I felt in my entire life. To truly stick it to somebody without blowing up in their face by I took the power back by leaving the military in the correct fashion. Maybe it doesn't happen that often. There's this joke. I remember seeing a guy who had been busted for DUI. He went up to captain's mast. He came back to the barracks and he was on restriction. And he said, and I quote, "Well, now I'm guaranteed chief." Huh. In other words, with a blot on your record, you might as well stick it out the rest of the time you're in the military. But again, there are people that are celebrities that understand, that have gone through the military. Charles Schulz understands some things. He understood what it means to blend in and feel forgotten, being completely lonely in the midst of so many people that are on the same mission, but there's no individualism. For Bill Cosby to realize, "I've done this to myself. I don't want this type of existence. I'm going to go back to college and do something about it." Now, that is not to say those who are in a trade or a vocation of any kind. God bless you. I was told this a lot in middle school. If you are going to not take care of your business in school, you'll be in the back of that garbage truck. What they don't tell you is the people who work in waste disposal have great retirements. They don't tell you that they make a really good paycheck. Doing what people don't want to do. Nothing wrong with that at all. The problem is if you do an occupation and you are not happy, then you need to do something about it. I hated my time on that ship. I appreciate people like Daniel Hurd and all of the friends I made and all of my shipmates, all my friend sailors. I appreciate you, but my life was a miserable HE double hockey sticks, and I don't miss it. And I'm thankful that I took back something I had control of. I don't share that very often, but I'm sharing it now. I'm very happy to have finished my degree, and I am teaching middle school kids, and I now have this thing called a podcast, which allows me to be a storyteller, and I'm not ashamed of my accomplishments, but I'm thankful that I got to tell somebody that I don't need you. I don't need your authoritative BS. I don't need you trying to depict my life the way you think it should be. But in the military, it's mission first. God bless those who choose to be in the military and do need that type of structure. I clearly found out that my wings were just too bright. I'm thankful for Charles Schultz and seeing this on his timeline and how it profoundly changed him, but he came back after the military and became, hands down, the greatest American cartoonist of all time. Bill Cosby, yeah, you were the guy we thought you were. You stumbled nonetheless, but I appreciate the fact that you had stories about the military that reminded me of the same thing, that I appreciate the Navy for reminding me that I am meant to do something else in this world. And I'm thankful that I have a chance in this open forum to tell you that this Navy veteran would not have it any other way, and I'm not sorry for doing my 4 years, leaving the military with an honorable discharge, using my post-9/11 GI Bill, and now I get to serve my community as a middle school teacher and be a podcaster who talks to you on the weekend about things that are on my heart, things that I am passionate about, and I appreciate you for being on this ride with me for almost 200 episodes now. Blockhead Nation, thank you once again for tuning into this episode of the Your Favorite Blockhead Podcast. This show is sponsored by KitCaster. Guys, did you know that having a podcast is a great way to grow not only your personal brand, but your business? Here's the secret. We all want to feel connected to brands we buy from. And what better way to humanize a brand than through sharing your story on a podcast? That's where KitCaster comes in. KitCaster is a podcast booking agency that specializes in developing real human connections through podcast appearances. Whether you're an expert in the field or you just have a unique story to share, it's time to explore the world of podcasting with KitCaster. Go to the link at kitcaster.com/blockhead to apply for a special offer for listeners of this show. That's kitcaster.com/blockhead. You'll find that in the blog, the notes for today's show. Let's get back to the episode. Our scripture of the day comes from Isaiah chapter 50, verse 8. He is near that justifieth me. Who will contend with me? Let us stand together. Who is mine adversary? Let him come near to me. Straight from the commentary from blueletterbible.org. There is no foe so great and no force so terrifying as to hold any sway over the Son of God. Take comfort in the strength of his arm and know to a certainty that if he is for you, then truly none can be against you. That's even a reference to Romans chapter 8, verse 31. Now, what more can I say when it comes to recapping Conor versus Dustin Poirier? Okay. Either you were watching or you were not. I found it interesting how, if you want to get a quick update on anything that's going on in the UFC, even though I refer to other resources like Blue Letter, not Blue Letter, but Bloody Elbow, or if I refer to something like The Athletic, or if I listen to other podcasts that are MMA fighters as the host, I mean, I could go through all that, but a quick update you can get quick for the UFC is Twitter. Most of the back and forth happens on that little app. And that's kind of where we can start with, is that a lot of the updates on what could have possibly have happened with Conor McGregor's leg can be traced back through all of the Twitter feed. So, if you didn't watch, which I didn't, and I happened to catch the highlight reels afterwards, you have one round where Conor McGregor has this, he's throwing these wild kicks. Dustin has definitely got a lot more ground control. He's throwing some elbows from the top, but then somewhere in there, you have Conor stands on his leg and it just buckles underneath him, and we have a TKO via doctor stoppage. Herb Dean's calling it off. Either way, this is deemed as a TKO. Now, we go back and we hear from Conor's camp that supposedly he had hurt his leg earlier in training sometime this week. Now, that right there has some red flags that just appear all over the map. If you got a doctor that is going to allow this fighter to continue for the sake of pay-per-view buys, for the sake of the venue, for ticket sales, for the sake of just the sport itself, for this being the Golden Goose. You're going to allow Connor to jeopardize his leg to go into a match with Dustin Poirier. If that's the case, then I can smell a lawsuit on that a mile away, from the doctor to the athletic commission. This is just a monster that's about to unveil. And now, going off of what we're being told, that he had something with him. Apparently, Dustin says to him, "You've hurt yourself." There's some point where the pic is showing Poirier, who he's pointing at McGregor's leg. He said in the octagon, "I have to go with the man who's actually in the arena." Dustin does say that I felt something, I hurt something. Of course, we hear him yelling when Joe Rogan's having that very cringeworthy, in my mind, cringeworthy interview with Connor while he's on the ground. We have a wounded animal, and he mentions to him there was no check. Like I mentioned before, I think I said this on Facebook, we now know that Connor didn't send anything to the Good Fight Foundation after all, because he admitted it on the fight. There was no check. Some of y'all are going to understand that, and if you're MMA fans, and some of you are not. But I'm going to pull something else that not a lot of people are talking about. If I'm going to give what I think happened, I have to go with a veteran fighter's analysis. Boss Rutten. If you're not familiar with Boss Rutten, you can go back to the early days of the UFC. You can go into the days of Pride. You can dig through and find who Boss Rutten is. You can also find his defense videos that he made. If you get into a bar fight, there's ways to get... He'd show you how to throw a proper headbutt, how to properly break somebody's arm. This is a tough dude all the way around. And apparently a lot of people have been asking him to break down the fight and what happened with Connor's leg. And Boss Rutten says this. I'm literally going to read from what I have from him, and I quote, "They asked me what I thought of the fight between Connor and Dustin, if a check is what caused the whole problem. So Poirier says that he checked a kick. He said he felt something, and he was pointing at McGregor to let him know that he hurt himself." Well, these picks are from the beginning of the fight. So he's scanning through them, and he can see where, you know, Dustin is saying, "You hurt yourself." Connor throws a kick, and Dustin lifts his leg a little bit, again, quoting what Boss Rutten said. "Just enough for Connor to connect to the side of the knee in where the section of the meaty part is, just above the knee. Which, if you feel yourself on the outside of your knee, there is this very thick bone. And if you look into the picture where he kicks, you can see his calf muscle hanging down, meaning it's relaxed. This could be key to wrapping up the case." Okay, now, if we've got an injury for Connor walking into the cage, automatic problems right there. But as far as this particular kick, there's something to be considered. If you throw a sloppy punch at someone, let's just say, for instance, you get aggravated and you want to hit somebody and you decide to up and hit them, but you don't give some type of a proper closed fist, I'm asking you, Blockhead Nation, who are you going to hurt? Now, if you actually properly clench your fist just enough to where you're not gripping too much, you don't throw where the pinky is, you actually turn at a 45-degree angle where your top knuckle is going to come in contact with somebody's skull, then you're more likely going to hurt your adversary. Okay? Now, I'm not going to go into detail about the proper punches and proper techniques. What I'm saying is, if you're throwing a sloppy punch, you're going to break your own hand or break your own pinky. This is what Boss Rutten is saying, that it was relaxed. This means he didn't flex his leg where he kicked. That means the ankle is completely relaxed, and with that power, because he was kicking hard, a relaxed ankle hitting a thick bone, that could have started the whole thing, that probably fractured it right then and there. Now, this is just simply him dissecting. He even talks about a fight that he had in Japan where he was fighting with a guy, and the guy throws a kick at him, and he clearly hears something break. The referee comes over and checks Boss Rutten's knee, which 90% of the time with those type of injuries, it's usually the knee. The referee says, "You're fine." And of course, Boss is going to step in and intervene. "What do you mean I'm fine? We heard something." Well, it wasn't him after all. It happened to be his adversary. It happened to be his shin bone that they had heard crack. So this could easily have been the same deal. This is what Boss Rutten is laying out. When you don't flex your leg when you're kicking and you hit a hard or some type of solid object with a relaxed muscle, in this case being the ankle, this can very easily happen. It's like hitting somebody while not squeezing your hand into a fist. When you hit a skull with a relaxed hand, you can easily break your hand. But then we had an update that came on the back end. This is kind of an unquote on everything that Boss Rutten has laid out here about Connor's injury. Now, there was also the coach that came out that said Connor had hurt his ankle in training, and there is a pick from the last kick on the elbow from Dustin. So all that together, injured, kicked the hard part of the knee, and then finally the elbow kick. Maybe somewhere in there was a check. All this could have contributed to the injury. Whew. That's a lot to take on, don't you think, Blockhead Nation? But it's plenty for us to chew on, just if we are trying to diagnose what's happening. But in my understanding that this, with the numbers coming in, this is the second highest pay-per-view buys of all time. Apparently number one still goes to Conor versus Khabib. Now, I want all of you to consider something about this sport. It's very ironic to me that this sport is not about who the best man for the job is. Here's what I mean by that. The three megastars in the UFC, we're all going to have to agree on this one. Nobody tunes in for some of these other fighters, but everybody tunes in for Conor McGregor. And he's now on a losing streak. The whole world is watching when Nate Diaz fights, and he just lost to Leon Edwards. But it didn't feel like one because of how Nate Diaz sold himself. We're going to give this guy a pass, even though Leon Edwards wins. And then you have the other one, which is Jorge Masvidal. And all of these are coming off of a loss. Each one I just gave you has an L from their last performance. And quickly, we go to, well, who do you think is the best, Blockhead? Who do you think it is? I'm not going with my depiction of who I think is the best. What I'm going to lay out for you is the most dominant and the best pound for pound. And this goes by everybody that's in the industry, what they have to say. If you look at the rankings right now for the very best in the sport, it is no denying that that number one man, that number one spot, belongs to Kamaru Usman. Okay? If you look at every ranking, number one, UFC.com, Kamaru Usman, pound for pound best, currently right now. The current fighters that are active, okay? I got to consider who we're talking about here. We're talking about John Jones that somehow continues to hold the number two spot. We're not going to get into that one too much. But as far as the best, look at the names I'm going to throw out to you who say that he's the best. Ariel Helwani, Kamaru Usman, Brett Okamoto, Kamaru Usman, Luke Thomas, Kamaru Usman. UFC staff, they did a full survey of who they believe were the very best. Only one that I remember seeing said possibly Israel Adesanya because of his last performance. Every one of them said Usman. I go to these clubhouse meetups and I listen to people talk about the best ranked ones. They finally reset a room and said, okay, we're going to take everybody's vote. Who do you think is the best? I only heard three names be said that are currently fighting right now. Kamaru Usman was 95% of the answer. One said Israel Adesanya, and it's a debate between those two. It's a toss-up between Usman and Adesanya. One gave it to Alexander Volkanovski. Now, that's going to be hard to defend if he loses to Brian Ortega, the number two guy, which, again, when it comes to the Ultimate Fighter, this guy clearly is a better coach. I'm sorry to say it, but when it comes to the approach and these other fighters coming in, then the evidence is there to say that T-City is definitely a threat to Alexander Volkanovski's title, which we will see in due time. But all of this being said, the most dominant, if you go with an undefeated record, it's Khabib. I put it out there. The three biggest stars. This is how it makes this sport so strange. And it comes down to respect doesn't sell tickets. It comes down to you've got the best guy out there, and most people down the street couldn't tell me who Kamaru Usman is. But if I say UFC, they might go, oh, that's that thing Conor McGregor does. Yeah, I like that Nate Diaz guy. Who's that other guy that got that 5-second knockout? Yeah, Masvidal. Man, I like that guy. Masvidal has 2 losses against Kamaru Usman. But are we paying attention? The world certainly doesn't seem to be. The most dominant athlete in the world is Khabib. Yes, I said in the world. Name somebody else has an undefeated streak that he does. Name somebody who's a wrestler who has given a blessing. He's passed a blessing on to a gentleman who's fighting tonight. Is the world talking about this fight? I'll tell you right now, as a shareholder in the UFC, I sold my stock the very next day that the market was open. My Endeavor Group holdings, I sold them. And you're going, why would you do that, Blockhead? One, because it's a penny stock. 2, are you going to get any higher this year than Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor 3? Name me a storyline. Give me a narrative that's higher than that. You sell high. You don't sell low. And 3rd of all, I looked in the company and went, oh, it's got a lot of accumulated debt over 10 years. This isn't good to hold on to this penny stock that's $27 to $30 when it should be around a dollar something. That's a problem. Yes, I no longer have shares in the UFC. Not because I'm irritated of something that's going on, but it is bizarre. These 3 names that hold an L are the most recognizable fighters. Your best pound for pound is clearly Kamaru Usman. Your most dominant is Khabib, who is passing his blessing on to the fighter right now for Islam. Islam Makhachev is your main event tonight for UFC Fight Night, and most of you don't know who I'm talking about. Khabib has passed on his blessing, but the UFC fan base has not. Now, if you want to prove me wrong, then go listen to UFC Fight Night tonight. Go check out the fights, and we'll have something to talk about, which I will be tuning into that fight. Co-main event, I'm giving it all to Miesha Tate, but I'm keeping my expectations low. Would love to see her come back in a comeback story. Just, and without Miesha Tate, there really is no uprise to this thing called Ronda Rousey. And that's another thing when people say, oh, the sport's going to go into the dark ages. The UFC will continue on with or without Conor McGregor. Yes, I said it. The sport continued on without George St. Pierre. It continued on without Anderson Silva. It continued on without Brock Lesnar. It continued on without Ronda Rousey. As much as it may pain you to hear this, the UFC had a contracted fighter who is injured, who is easily out for 6 months, but to get him back to the caliber that he needs to be to face the number one contender in the most dangerous division, the lightweight division, who clearly has nobody else standing in his way except for Charles Oliveira for the title, you are not going to have him on that level again. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Conor's career is done, because his mouth is not done running. But as far as that contracted fighter, he's on the sidelines. The UFC will continue on with whoever the machine wants to get behind. Is that going to be Sugar Sean O'Malley? Who knows? I love how he gave his adversary his debut, telling him this is one of the toughest dudes I've ever stepped in. We're talking a story of Apollo Creed versus Rocky Balboa. Rocky won. He wouldn't stay down. He went the entire time, and the world has respect for him now. But either way, if you're going to tune in tonight, main event, Islam Makhachev. This is the guy who had the blessing from Khabib to be the next Khabib 2.0. And are you giving it to him or not? Kind of hard to tell where we stand at this point, but it should be an interesting ride to see moving forward post-Conor McGregor or during the time of Conor McGregor's recovery. Interesting to see how Jake Paul sent on that little... can't even remember what that's called off the top of my head. Looks like a Christmas tree ornament. But nonetheless, he made this for Dustin Poirier, and he's going to auction it off for the Good Fight Foundation. That's nice to see. Either way, very interesting chapter that we're turning into. Are you going to join us in reading along the chapter of the UFC without Conor McGregor? We'll see tonight with the results of that. I'm really looking forward to next week's fight, TJ Dillashaw versus Corey Sanhagen. Bantamweight division is on fire. I am pro Sanhagen. We'll see what happens there. We're getting closer and closer to episode 200. I hope to see you there. If you want to support this show, go to yourfavoriteblockhead.com/blog. Check out all the links for the show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave a review. Those are always helpful for the algorithm. We'll see you guys next Saturday, same blockhead time, same blockhead channel.